Mind over matter. Overcompensating. Overstatements. Crookedness relating. The soul's churn in return. Mental overstimulation. One word. Riveting. It tethers my pilot. Streams that are promised to make seeking less. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back, welcome back, welcome back. You are through to Poetry Journal Podcast, host of Poetry Journal Podcast, and I will be joined by my good friend, the philosopher's poet. We're going to be discussing a few topics as per usual. So hope everybody's well, doing good. Before I kick things off, just want to share a piece or a quote from a piece. As you know, I am the mad poet, as it says in my profile. So I'd like to share a few pieces here and there. But yes, this is what I have for you today. It says, seeing scars from afar, worries come like the wind, although the stains threaten to remain if I too often relate. Taking my kindness for granted, never knowing when the wind may need carnage, so I stay stricken in a premise, then dare the world to reminisce, watching the effects of the moon as I develop my coldness. The tides wash and sway on the way to the shore, to never again treat someone I once taught the world of the same. Isn't that the meaning of lame? Just a few words wanted to start off with. So these are things I really want to, I was looking to cover today and just have a discussion. And of course, you know, if you're willing to, if you're open to tuning in and just kind of share the flow with me and give an input, always welcome to. But otherwise, I will be chopping up with my good friend, philosopher's poet, and a few other people that have been invited to tune in and have a discussion with me. So yeah, so these are questions I want to look to cover tonight. Does it pay to pander to women in the end? Does the justice system work? Is blood always thicker than water? Just a few questions, just a few questions. So I'll go over those again. Does it pay to pander to women in the end? Does the justice system work? Is blood always thicker than water? So, let me just see if I could get some retort going. Trying to find a friend of mine. Just give me a sec. But of course, if you have anything to say or comment on, you could just write it in the chat and I'll just read it out. Thank you.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you loud and clear.
Yeah, I was trying to find another option so we can actually so you can see me or you can show up on the chat, but it wasn't as easy to find you.
Never mind. It's all good.
But we'll figure it out. We'll figure it out. I'm
Yeah.
not sure if you you heard
I
who
heard.
I was speaking.
Yeah. I heard all things. Very interesting selection. The first one. Yeah, excellent choice tonight, I've got to say. Is that, am I reverbing?
No, you know, you're good.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so I guess let's start with question one. I mean, this is particularly prevalent in recent talking points. Not to segregate the audience, obviously within YouTube, even let's just focus on Black YouTube and YouTube in general. You can
No,
do
let's not make this let's just make this just give your opinion. I just want your opinion, your thoughts on the topic. Let's not make this general or anything like that. Let's just
Okay.
give our own opinion from what we've observed, you know, in this here and now society that we live in and what we've experienced and what we've observed. Let's go from there and perhaps we can evolve it from there.
Okay. I'm gonna my answer to this, the pander to women, I would say yes. I'm gonna give some context to this, obviously, why I'm saying yes. My reasoning is that something that started off that was looking at equality and obviously increasing the visibility of women, which is a good thing, in some respect, in some audiences, become quite extreme. Where in any normal discussion, you would talk about the responsibility of both parties in terms of, you know, how they live their life, consequences, agency. However, I think we have stepped into an age where that doesn't, it's not to say it doesn't exist, but it's been minimized, at least in the mainstream. It absolves women from responsibility, and puts it all on men. Now, this could just be a response to obviously patriarchy or what they consider sort of chauvinistic society, which I understand. I can see that. I just think it's gone too far to the extreme in many respects. Not in all respects, but in a lot of respects. And it's also tied to, you know, this is sort of tied to and it intersects with things like cancel culture.
All right, I don't really want to I don't really want to get too blown out of proportion. I think let's start with this. What's your answer to the question? Does it pay to pander to women in the end? What would you say your answer to? Just give me like a point for that, like your answer, and then we can break it down.
It does if you're looking at material wealth and success. So, yes, it does, but in the short term, in the long run, no, if you're talking about general.
I'm talking about in the end.
In the end, no, it doesn't.
Okay.
Nothing works out if you take shortcuts, if you don't talk objectively about something. All it
So,
needs.
in your opinion, from what you're saying to pander to women is a shortcut. It's pretty much like the easy way out or a shortcut.
I mean, don't get it twisted. I'm not saying this as someone who doesn't agree with women's rights. I do. You could use the argument on the other side for men, but on this particular conversation instance, yeah, it's going to result in a lot of disappointment and a lot of a lot of crushed dreams or ideas, let's say. It's not good for the development of not just women, but men and women in terms of relationships in any form.
I suppose where I was trying to get to was, as they say, the proof is in the pudding, right?
Yeah.
So if some way, somehow it does work, then whoever, you know, subscribes to that, in the end, the proof is in the pudding. So if this is supposed to be something that's functional, something that works, then pretty much what you're saying is, if I look at your relationship, well, technically that means you still have a relationship, you know, and the sample size is long enough to actually show that, where, you know, I've been with this person long enough and pandering to them actually works, but not only work, but is actually effective enough to show that we're functional. I am playing my role, the role that I'm supposed to play. And not only that, vice versa, my opposite is playing their role and we are functional. There's a reciprocation there. Do you get what I mean? We kind of understand each other and we do for each other. And yeah, so I'm just trying to break down, you know, what functionality should look like in a sense. Just trying to paint a picture. So that's pretty much where I'm coming from with the question. And this is why I'm asking you, just so you can kind of get, you know, where I was trying to go with the question.
It's pandering that doesn't create functional relationships, because someone is always going to be diminishing their needs or their at the expense of satisfying someone else, and the other person will never gain the maturity or understanding to value the person or view the greater success, in my opinion. Because I'll give you an example. If rather than get to the heart of any issues, if you had like a partner, all you did is just, I'm just gonna pander, I'm just gonna appeal to them and forget my own concerns or questions or even my emotions about something. It's pretty unhealthy. That's one person is suffering in one way, not being able to express themselves fully, rightly or wrongly, and the other person is not flourishing as a mature, emotionally. Yeah. So that
was a
given disaster.
Fair enough. So what would you say to, just to kind of go into a little bit deeper, what would you say to those men or women that say that, you know what, somebody that gives me what I want, like let's say for a man, where it's just like, you know, not only being vulnerable, but to the extent where, like, well, how about an extremely vulnerable or extremely emotional man? And pretty much, you know, I've heard a lot out there, and one of the narratives is that women likes men that are vulnerable. That requires you to share emotions. And you know, when I think about emotion, I almost think about like a tap, right? Ooh. That you pretty much run. And but you know, there's levels to how open somebody is. So the reason why I say extreme, imagine you're running a tap, you know, you just let it run freely. And I just kind of imagine somebody like a man, you know, being like that and to the extreme. But I think, you know, free reign to be in that state as a man, I wonder how would a woman kind of receive that?
So this
somebody in that situation.
This is so interesting. Because the first thing I want to say is what women as a collective say they want and how they respond can be two different things. So I actually think it's healthy for men to express their emotions, but it's how much, how much you do that. You know, you said there are levels to this. In a weird way, even though I think if we were emotionally open and vulnerable on both sides, the men included, I think that's an ideal society. It doesn't work in practice because neither of us of the genders are mature enough to have that kind of relationship. There are still existing patterns and expectations on around the and people still have ideas. Maybe men are overly emotional or too feminine. So as a man, it's a balance to express how you feel, but also to retain your mystery. I'm not saying that that's ideal, but that's just the world we live in. Progressing to a point where men can be more simple, but not everyone's comfortable being an open book.
If you think about it,
if you're a mirror and you meet someone who is not very emotionally open, a woman, if you suddenly open up, you're an open book, that might be too much for someone. But you're not matching each other in terms of your emotional vulnerability, but you're both matching each other in terms of an insecurity. Or one is a need to be understood on the man's side through open expressions, and on the woman's side, insecurity is a need to protect herself by not expressing so much. Scared. Like this can be interchangeable in either gender. But the point is, there's an expectation in society that men have to have a certain level of unattachment in their attitude, like we're robots, which is sad. But then in the extreme, if we're overly emotional, then the honest truth is not an attractive trait to a lot of women. I'm not saying that's right, it's just how things are. And men need a space to be emotional, and they need to meet a woman who is able to contend with them emotional vulnerability.
Pause right there. So you said men need a space to be emotional. Are you saying with the person or just a space? Like, how does that work? Are you saying with that person they're with their partner, they need a space to be, or they need that freedom?
Yes.
Like a safe space with that same person? Or are you saying just in general, or with a separate space away from the partner that they're with? Is that what you're saying?
Ideally with their partner, but also functionally they need a safe space anyway. Say if you can't present the same emotions to your partner, I mean, apart from the obvious fact that maybe you need to not be together, you still need a space to express your emotions. So because we're talking about women and men in relationships, I would say yes, you can't need a safe space on your partner. You can't get that from your partner. You'll get it from somewhere else.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. And by the way, if anyone is in the chat, you're always welcome to volunteer to speak or share your views as well.
Don't be shy.
Everyone's open to chime in if they want. Just leave a message or a comment, and I'll try to bring through or just read your comment of what you want to share. Okay, the other thing I wanted to kind of just speak on is, does the justice system work? There you go. And it just went up.
It found that this was a survey done. The judiciary in England and Wales is institutionally racist, and they say that more than half of legal professionals surveyed claim to have witnessed the judge acting in a racially biased way.
Okay.
That's quite telling. That's I mean, I don't have numbers for obviously sentences, but that would be, that's quite telling, like.
I hear you. But it's somewhat, I suppose it's a facet of, like, you know, indicating something more. But as you said, it's not necessarily, you know, on a larger scale of, like, numbers, where the numbers would tell so much more of a deeper story behind, give more deeper details behind, you know, the situation. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not aware that there is a certain disadvantage that certain minorities have when it comes to these type of situations pertaining to court and just being disadvantaged over the years, or, like, you know, from a lineage perspective, just growing up in this society and then to this point now where you're at a situation where that disadvantage is now it's almost like a darkness kind of follow you to this point in your life where it's rearing its ugly head, and now this disadvantage is now gonna be the cause of me being locked up because I can't afford fees to pay lawyer bills, etc., etc. Yes, of course. But the reason why I really weigh numbers, etc., because I don't really too want to make it such a, I don't want to make it an anecdotal type of situation where we just kind of speak on one or two issues or just things that we were aware of or stories we were aware of and just blow it up to kind of make it like a, you know, like a microcosm and a reflection of a larger society. You know, I don't really necessarily want to go down that road.
So, I mean, that what you mentioned there was quite interesting in the first place about even bail, for example. Someone, you're more likely to be able to afford bail, for example, obviously, if you've got the financial means, you know, rather than remain in remand. So I'm just looking at something else here while we're on the... this is another article from the Financial Times. So, because I just wanted to cover some sort of number or stat for you. This was November 2023, and this says that the research uncovered evidence of racial bias. Non-white defendants are accused of serious offences were more than 50% less likely to be granted unconditional bail than white people accused of comparable crimes. But that's another example.
Yeah.
But then there's a lot of intersectionality here, because obviously you could say, is this the working class, the poor? And you could say yes, so there's a lot of overlap. But then you look statistically, the proportion of people who are deemed working class, and you look at obviously the percentage of people in those categories and what ethnicity they sit into. So there's some things that are obviously correlations here that and some people might argue maybe that's more circumstantial, but I think it's probably not that simple, you know. It's interesting. I think it's, you know, it's one of those things where you're right that actually you shouldn't make anecdotal statements. I think it's probably something that was well known 30 years ago, and I guess it's just, is that still hold up today or yes. 20 years ago? And I'd be a bit absent-minded to say actually that the statistics haven't improved. They have, but obviously there's no progress and there's slow progress. So
okay, fair enough.
The other thing I wanted to touch on is is blood always thicker than water?
What's this doing watching this now? It's okay. You know what? As much, it's not something I would announce to family members, but I'm gonna be honest and say my opinion is I think that it isn't always thicker than water. I.e., sometimes the people you choose, your friends or family or your tribe, are closer to you than people by blood, and maybe everyone has some relatives. I certainly do. Where if they weren't blood relatives, I probably wouldn't have much to do with them because they're blood. But it's seen as disloyal to say that. It's quite a difficult thing to say. That it's quite a sensitive thing to say that you have friends or people you know that you might prefer more than certain family members, but that, you know, you can't choose certain family members. You can expect the minimum, which is respect and love, so you would be there for them, but you know, if you had the choice. I just think it's a hard thing to say, especially with the older generation. Like, I would never say that. I would have never said that to my grandma when I was like, she would have whipped my ass. Especially, it's, and but then that also can be quite toxic, because then the extreme is you can, families can protect and insulate family members who are toxic and have put themselves in abusive circumstances and family dynamics over other individuals in the family, you know, which is sad. And some family members can compromise their relationships with friends or people they meet where they do have a real connection over, obviously, family ties, you know. I'm not saying that because I'm not saying that you cut off family, because I don't believe in that, but I think that it's funny that people don't think about the boundaries and subconsciously put up for that uncle who maybe takes advantage of your mum, for example, at Christmas or whatever, or but they don't consider the same thing that we do for friends or girlfriends or other people. We have a right to put up to love people from a distance, even if that's certain family members. But even as I said again, sometimes loyalty is good, but it's not good if it's misplaced, you know.
That's interesting. So just to give me the essence of everything, so just give me a bow tie. It's just, what's the point, to the very point of the question? Just give me the baseline answer. Is blood always thicker than water?
Blood is not always thicker than water. Yeah, that's my answer. But I really wanted to understand your perspective a bit on this. The reason I'm asking you is because obviously we have individual experiences, but I want to know if there's any cultural connections, both of us being from, you know, Jamaica. But I'm just curious.
Me personally, as much as I'm curious about, you know, I'll excuse for you for your answer as well. I'm curious about, you know, people's interpretation of it. In my opinion, I don't think there's any such thing, you know, as blood being thicker than water.
And I would say your answer is one step ahead of mine. And the reason I say that is because you haven't considered the concept, or you've considered it and put it to the side, which is probably a good thing to do. This is probably something that, this is probably a generational thing, I'd say, more so.
Yeah, but at the same time, I do get the gist behind why the question is what it is. Do you get what I mean? And obviously, it's like you said, it's somewhat cultural, such a cultural saying. you know, this is something that, you know, has been in the black community, this type of question, and somewhat probably we're probably of this opinion because it might be again anecdotal, where it's pretty much in everybody's, I would imagine, in everybody's kind of household, culturally speaking, you know, across different races. So I don't, it's hard to say that it's kind of like, you know, it's more of a personal thing because, you know, it's, we've kind of heard it so much in our community kind of thing. But there, for me personally, I don't think there's any such thing, because when I think about connections, there are no rules, there are no laws, there are no stipulations when it comes to what we're talking about, blood and water and what that means in terms of like relationships to other people. You get what I'm saying?
I think
I think just as what you might get from a blood relationship member, you can pretty much get the same thing from somebody that you don't know, and met them 5 minutes down the road.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm saying,
yes.
Like, you know, that encapsulates everything that you get from somebody that, you know, as a blood member, because that's different. But I'm just saying, like, there's certain facets that just but to kind of go even more advanced than that, there's certain things that, you know, happen with somebody that you meet. And for example, you might have this family member that's treated you with respect, etc., etc., right? And it's a standard thing. But then you go down the road and you might meet somebody that you've never met, of a different culture, totally, you know, separate from yourself in terms of like relation and how you relate to people and the world. And just off that positive gist that you get from, you know, pertaining to the experience that you have with that person, you initiate a bond, right? And this bond literally grow over time, and you grow to see this person as somebody that's beyond the standard. The possibility that this person could like, we're just describing the situation, but this person could potentially be somebody that's treated you beyond the standard that you know of, right?
Yeah.
And this person has always been the person, the go-to, because they've shown themselves to be of such a caliber that,
yeah,
you know, the respect and the attentiveness.
They can understand you.
The growth.
Yeah.
Or the potential, the capacity for growth over the years have been phenomenal. Have been right. And but at the same time, I think you can flip that coin and it could be the same thing.
Yeah, it's interchangeable. I think the presupposition for me just came back because something I'd heard someone say online. And it was very sort of family-oriented. So that's what brought up this. And I remember family members mentioning it when I was a kid. So obviously it's a different perspective. As a kid, you look at adults as being beyond human. And then as an adult, you look at those same human beings as just being human. In the same way, that flips in terms of your expectations of people and how you perceive, as you said, connection, and who your real, I'm going to use this phrase, soul tribe are, for lack, whatever that means. Soul tribe, for whatever that means to you. Yeah. And the thing about those kind of connections is, you're right, they can last a lifetime, they can last 5 minutes. You know, but that person, that particular day, and that particular time said something that made you realize how valuable you were as a human being, and they gave something to you that might be intangible, it's not necessarily material, but it allowed you to bring on the resources and the strength that you either already knew you had or didn't know you had at the time. You know?
Yes, yes, yes. Absolutely, absolutely. I do have one more question though.
let's hear it.
Is simping an epidemic? let's unpack that one.
Okay. I need you to break this down for me. When you say an epidemic, do you mean that a large proportion of society or community, even as men, let's just are doing it, or large, just the loud proportion?
A larger proportion.
Large or loud?
A larger portion.
Oh, it's hard to discern the loud and large. Maybe it's enough of a proportion to say that enough of it is considerable. Yeah,
again, I don't really want to, you know, blanket statements. I pretty much just want to just keep it, you know, from your experience, my experience, and just what you know of the world so far. Do you get what I mean? Just this stuff. Yeah. I don't want to make blanket statements.
Okay, from my own experience, yes, there's a sizable proportion of, let's say, men who do simp. And I'm speaking as someone who, in my earlier days, has also been a simp. There's still some little left in me, but I've largely discarded a lot of it. You know, and you know why I believe that a larger portion of men are simps?
Why is that?
Simply because of the need to feel validated and valued by women, to need to have a partner, to not to be alone, the need to have a family, you know, the belief that if they let go of someone who doesn't serve the highest good, that they won't find someone again, or the lack of or will to meet someone if that person leaves. You know, it stems from attachment types and insecurity. And as again, I'm speaking from someone who's hasn't been through that experience. I only ever went through that experience myself, and I see it. I've seen it in a lot of other men because of this need to feel like women find them attractive or valuable. It's a point of desperation. I've seen this a lot with guys with dating apps, if I'm my honest opinion.
You talk about the pandering.
Yes. But simping, because I say there is an overlap. But when you say simping, when I think of simping, I'm thinking of pandering, but I'm also thinking of a man who's willing to forgo his own needs in a relationship just to satisfy or make someone happy at the expense of his own truth, his own happiness, his own opinions. You know, that's the difference that people
forgoing his own needs. I'll just add to it, forgoing his principles,
his beliefs. Yes, and that's in a broader sense, that's people pleasing, but obviously in the context of trying to find someone to settle down with, you know. I have come across a lot of men who do, and I think there's something to be had in the satisfaction of rather being in the presence and the pleasure of your own company than discarding that to be in the company of someone who doesn't get you, or someone who's too selfish to acknowledge that it's a two-way street. And that's a problem. Men who simp, because of their own insecurity, they attract women who will take advantage of the man who simps. They don't realize that by doing that and not being authentic, they meet women who are willing to take advantage of the fact they're not authentic. So it's, do you know what I mean? In order to meet the kind of woman, you kind of have to be in a space of valuing and knowing your worth.
Yes, you are what you attract, basically.
Yeah.
Those are pretty much, you know, just standard laws of attraction. That's interesting. From what I've seen, I would agree. I think it is a epidemic. You know, I'm also of the opinion, which is consistent with this point in agreement, that it is an epidemic, because from what I understand, there's more males than there are men. If you get what I'm saying.
I know what you're saying.
That, you know, there's a lot of males, but there's not a lot of men.
Yes.
Which leads me to another question I had.
Can I just say something, just to clarify for the audience or whoever this goes to when we're finished as well, that when we talk about forgoing your own needs, we're not saying that it's a man who also doesn't consider a woman's needs or is selfish like that. We're saying a man who drops his own principles, who, you know, I don't want anyone to be confused that we're some sort of hardcore red pillars or anything who believe women as the devil or something. We're not saying that. I'm just clarifying this for the audience.
No, you're right. I agree. It's pretty much just saying when things are out of balance, where, like, you're not necessarily catering for your needs at all. You're pretty much just catering for the opposite side. You're doing everything as requested, but you don't demand anything in return, or demand that you have there's balance.
Yes.
Or to the fact where you have something or anything.
Yeah. It's nice to cater for someone's needs in a relationship, but you can't forget yourself either. So it's just, you're right, that's the balance. You've got something else in the mind. You said you were gonna.
Yes, I was thinking about something. Now this is somewhat abstract.
Sure.
But do you believe heartbreak is rite of passage for a man?
I believe, yes. I think I think growth for a man is in this, especially in this day and age, heartbreak is almost like a prerequisite for growth for a man. In this day and age in particular, because it builds resilience, it builds the ability to hopefully self-reflect on the relationship, to take time to yourself, take stock, spend time with yourself and heal. And it's very necessary, because rejection is part of life.
Yeah.
And a lot of men, especially a lot of men who, like, you know, you hear about incels, that's evidence of a man who hasn't done the healing, so he can't deal with rejection, so he does something messed up, goes and kills someone or whatever, very extreme, sorry. But heartbreak is required for a man to build up his strength, his inner strength, to understand himself, and also to objectively evaluate the relationship, his own actions as well as hers, or, you know, however you deem relationships and gender dynamics. But it's necessary in my opinion, and as I said, in today's day and age, heartbreak is almost inevitable in a relationship. Even if it's amicable, there's still a level of heartbreak, but we're talking about more extreme. You know, you don't get away out of a relationship, even if it's amicable, without any pain.
That's interesting. That's one thing, you know, I've been thinking about it, and just trying to piece it together. But in essence, you know, when I really broke it down, it all came back to the same thing. I think when it comes to that dynamic, compare, or should I say that dichotomy
a man compared to a woman and what makes us better. I think men flourish, or they're better, or they grow from situations that are harsh. I would imagine the most harshest thing I could think of is heartbreak for a man, in my opinion.
Oh, yes. So,
however,
yeah, I have to agree with you, because emotion.
Now, just one second. On the other end, though, I and this could just be my opinion alone. People might disagree, but I think the other side of the coin is women flourish from less, you know, that sense of survival mode, from being away from stress. You know, those extreme type of living, I think that's when a woman flourish. So those are two pieces of coin that, you know.
That's interesting. I think if we're gonna say men, if dealt with correctly, it strengthens men, it should do the same theory for women. Emotional wounds, especially for a man, are worse than physical wounds. Like, I don't think you can really describe, when you're in it, the depth of the pain you feel, even though you've got no scars on your body or whatever. You know, it affects everything. From personal experience, of course, like, emotional wounds are rough. Now, I think there's an expectation.
Pause right there. The only reason why I ask you to pause is because it's not necessarily the wound itself, but it's how you recover from it. Now, once you recover from it, who's better for it, or better after it? That's the question I'm asking. That's the question that leads me to my conclusion. Because I don't think the results are surprising.
Okay. I'm going to say, in this day and age, the man's better for recovering from emotional wounds. But that's also because in today's day and age, societal pressures have expectations of a man when dealing with emotions that are contradictory to a man actually spending the time to heal and deal with the emotional wounds. There's still this perception for men just to, I think I was trying to say it before, keep calm and carry on and just keep going, like, that's still an expectation in society. So I think it benefits men more, in terms of, still there's some weird element of shame around a man being unable to express any emotional hurt or pain, or deal with some sort of emotional trauma. It's, I don't know why, but that still exists. Therefore, I think it greatly benefits men, simply because there are certain sections of society that still don't have an expectation for a man to process his emotions. Even within a lot of male communities, you know, it's still looked at as weak.
Okay, fair enough. I just saw Ishmael join the live. I'm not sure if he wants to chime in, but I'll just read out the some of the topics we've gone over so far, just in case you want to give an input. So far we went over, does it pay to pander to women in the end? That was the first question we kind of ran through. The next one was, I'm not sure if you had an opinion on that, Ishmael. Does the justice system work? And the other one we went through was, is blood always thicker than water? And to wrap things up, the final one was, is simping an epidemic? So, you know, if you wanted to kind of tune in about these topics, just let me know, and we can kind of perhaps break things down more, or you can just comment in the live. He said he likes the second and third. Does it pay to pander to women in the end? So you can just put a brief yes or no for the second. And yes, I like the second and third. So that's a no for the second. Does the justice system work? Which is the third. Wait. Oh, sorry, no.
Lewis Miller, if you want to join us.
You know what it is? For some reason, I'm trying to. I don't have the option to invite him like I do you for some reason. I'm not sure why. Yes, and I'm not sure if you wanted to tune in on the final one, which was, is simping an epidemic? I'm not sure if you wait to kind of address that one there, Ishbel. But I was curious about that one. He's laughing. But I thought it was a general one to just kind of, you know, just throw it in there where, you know, everybody can pretty much attack.
I think it's fun.
You think is what, sorry?
Everyone's, yeah. Everyone's done it. Are you talking to me? Or Ishmael?
Yeah, I'm talking to you, yeah.
I was gonna say, at some point in our lives, as very young men, we've all done it. To some extent. Very young, like, you know.
Don't get me wrong, like, I think all men started off as simp, to an extent. You know, but we're not talking about, you know, the younger men, because at that point you don't really know any better. I'm talking about, you know better, and you still go there. that's pretty much what I'm talking about. You're grown men, and then, you know, you go there.
Oh God, sorry. Someone once said to me the reason so many senses because of 90s R&B and slow jams.
Nah.
I don't believe that. I thought it was funny.
I mean, I hear that, but so what did you think when they said that? Like, did you take them serious?
For me, I said, at first I didn't, and then they said they were serious. And then I sort of took a step back and said, okay, I understand why you're saying that, because obviously there are a lot of songs out there about lovemaking, how you...
Yeah.
Wrong with that. I just think maybe they were saying that this is a sort of subconscious message that went into a lot of young men's minds about women. I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure I agree, to be honest. About that. I just thought it was quite funny. I didn't agree with it. In fact, to be honest, I've probably songs made about let's say romance, and there is about, you know, the other thing, but yeah, anyway, that's yeah, anyway.
I mean, you know, don't get me wrong, just because, you know, you were like, for example, you know, to write you know, as you know, I'm a poet. I mean, I'm called a mad poet for a reason. But at the same time, just because you can write love poetry, I don't think that makes you a simp. I have to put that out there.
Neither do I. I've written
I've written a lot of love poems. But again, there's a certain level that you write things where it's like, you know, it's art, and then you cross that boundary, and then that's when it becomes panda, and that's when I think that's where the simping starts. I think for me personally, I hear poetry, I love poetry, and then I hear poetry that is simp poetry. I've heard so many. In fact, I actually went to open mic today, and I can tell the difference when I hear it. You know what I mean? I think the difference is when it's love poetry, it's pretty much just like you're sharing. It's love. It's pretty much just like genuine, real, authentic, and it's just your experience on perhaps what your experience on what love is. And then I think when you cross the boundary is when you pretty much lay yourself on the floor as like a doormat, and pretty much the woman is starting to walk over you. That's how you portray yourself to this extent.
Yeah,
the woman's pretty much stopping on you. I think to that extent, now that for me, that's simple. And yeah, that's where the corniness comes into it, you know, where it's just like, What are you gonna say?
The best poems I've heard about love and romance are the ones that don't shy away from all the shadow aspects as well. You know, they're unapologetically bold about the good, the bad, and the ugly. It's not just flowery or flowers. You know, there's a time and a place for that, but it's not a tunnel vision. You know, it can be quite raw. Love, it can be quite raw. So, you know,
yes. That's the thing. You know, I think sometimes maybe striking a balance, or I think pretty much it goes back. Perhaps it just goes back to the same thing we started with when we asked this question about, you know, does it pay to pander to women in the end? Perhaps it goes back to the point where we're saying there's a lot of males, but there's not many men. You know.
Yeah. That, I love that phrase, males and men. The clear difference, obviously, being a male. Doesn't get the title of a man, because the title of a man, yeah, comes a certain, not like status in terms of maturity, let's say, and you know,
because you know, there's a lot of because it's funny, because I think, you know, even growing up in a matriarchal household, you know, where it's a single parent being your mother, I don't think that necessarily means you're damned to be a feminine man or something like that. A feminine man or something like that. Do you get what I mean? It comes down to you as a person and making that choice to be who you're supposed to be.
I agree. I also grew up in a single and family of my mum. In fact, I had more because I had my twin sister as well. So, and I never got the whole simping thing. My mum tried to make things a bit more objective for me about, you know, life, obviously from her perspective. But yeah, I never got that. In fact, I think a lot of the sources of, let's say, so-called simping I got were outside sources. Even TV and the media, at certain films, friends.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah, it's a totally I guess in essence, you know, there's nuances to what we're talking about, but for the most part, we're just speaking about the pinnacle point of most relevance. I think that's where we're kind of nitpicking to trying to get to.
I think if you tie everything together, especially around simping and pandering, and we touched on a bit of relationships, I think if you tie them together in a bow, you could probably look at the root causes of these things. I mean, we touched on them. They're about insecurity and self-worth and not willing to self-reflect and heal. Two fundamental things that you know, that are, that people felt many.
Self-mastery.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
And yes, indeed. What can we do about it as a society or as a community even?
Or pretty much two questions, or one question to ask: what is your role as who you are, as a man or a woman?
Our role, I think, that encompasses.
I'll add this part: not necessarily asking that question from somebody else, expecting an answer from somebody else. Asking yourself and figuring out for yourself.
You know? For me, I would say two words came up just off the top. One is one phrase is being honest with myself, and the second one is objectivity. The first one is the most important one. Being honesty and authenticity with myself first. Otherwise, you can't be honest with other people, you know. And that means making hard decisions for your own benefit, you know. An example would be, how many men do you know have been like, oh, I've just got out of a relationship or situation, or I need to focus on this particular thing in my life, whether it's my job or I've got a side hustle or an artist or whatever it is, and they just said, I'm going to take 6 to 12 months out for myself and just focus on myself, heal myself, do meditation, whatever, take up a hobby, you know what I mean? Self-improve, reflect, save money. How many men are strong enough to do that, especially after the end of a relationship, to take stock and be alone with themselves and not have this urge or need to go out there and find someone else?
I know men like that, but not many. Not many.
That's a real rare, it's a real gem of a thing, a trait, a quality to have. Because that in itself involves honest evaluation of one's position.
Because from what you're saying now, it sounds to me like you're veering much more into manhood and what, you know, what being a man is about.
Isn't this the sort of overarching thing, and the whole thing of simping is really tied to the idea of what manhood and becoming a man's about? Because we just said that there's a difference between a man and a man, and part of being a man is being honest with yourself, taking time to work on you, and not thinking that women are the center of your world, just a part of something, but they're not the be all and end all.
Yes. Those are some of the facets pointing towards that, or that's around. If we were brainstorming, that's pretty much would be around that bubble that we're talking about. You know, purpose.
Yeah.
Being knowing your purpose and being about it, being on path about your purpose. I think that's one of the biggest thing personally for me when it comes to being that person, being that man. Because legacy should be everything, really, you know?
Should be I agree completely that purpose is so important. Purpose is so understated and underrated by us, not just by men, by most people, because you only look at, you know, I need to do X to make enough money to do this, I need to do Y to do this. But in terms of like the why, or what you said this on the other, on another chat last week, you talked about the idea of that being like breathing. You know, there's a difference between starving for oxygen and being able to take a deep breath in abundance. Which one, obviously, the one that's abundant in air and oxygen and that force of life is the one where we do have a purpose, and the other is merely existing.
Yeah. Are you talking about when I asked a question about wanting it so bad as breathing? Wanting it as bad as taking another breath, you know, as breathing?
Yes, I was just tweaking this slightly in this context to say that in some sense you could say if you're breathing because you're starving of oxygen, so scarcity. But in another sense, if you're on your purpose, your breaths, every breath you take is deep and full of life, and it no longer becomes a chore.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's like, even if you have problems, it's like it's a good day in the office, because you know it's the type of problem you want to have because you love what you do. So the problems that come with it, you know, you love that as well, and you will figure it out. You know you will, because you know you put in the work and you take the time to get it done the way it's supposed to get done.
And sometimes when you're doing this, you might feel in the moment at your lowest depths, but I think it's the resilience and knowing that you won't be like this forever, that you're going to feel better. Because you don't always wake up feeling high all the time, but you know that you're going to be in a better place, or you know this is just temporary and you're able to get yourself out of it. Even then, you know, there's agency to you. You're like, okay, I'm feeling this way, I know what to do about it, and you know, I'm on my.
Absolutely. Well, I think it's about time to wrap it up for tonight. But this was fun. This was great. Do you have anything you want to promote?
Boy, the only thing I'm going to promote is this poetry event tomorrow on Instagram that you and I are taking part in.
Yeah, go on.
I think it's at, is it 9 o'clock?
Is that 9 p.m. you said?
I think so, yeah. If you tune in to us live with Justar, her name's Justa Misdemeanor, she's an artist.
Yeah.
You can find the details in my Instagram story. Again, I'll put them up again, and I'll put them up on TikTok as well. And as I said, both me and the Mad Poet will be performing. And there's plenty of other talent on there as well, so.
Yes, indeed. As for myself, I am the Mad Poet. I'm a writer and a podcaster. I have books. If you check my page, you can see I have a shop, and this is one of my titles, Poetry Journal Growing Pains. It's also on Amazon. If you check my profile, you find stories as well, and more poetry books. But this is one that, one of the most recent one that came out, that I have been selling most frequently recently. So you can order from me. My site is dean.uk, or you can order from Amazon. Either way, all good. And yeah, just get yourself a copy I have out there, or you can tune in to Culture Journal podcast. I am your host, and yeah, just love for you to kind of support and keep up with what I'm doing. And we will be back, I would say, in the next 2 days or so, either tomorrow, well, not tomorrow night, because we have the open mic going on, but perhaps on Saturday night or the Sunday, we'll be back to do another live and have another discussion. But this has been, thanks everyone for tuning in. Thanks Ishmael for coming through and sharing your thoughts in the comments.
Cheers Ishmael, man. Cheers.
And thanks to Philosopher's Poet for coming through and having this conversation with me and him, chopping up game as per usual. This has been fun.
Always is.
It's even better when we don't stand on the same side. You know, I enjoy that the most. But yes, thanks for everyone for tuning in. I appreciate you, Ishmael, Philosopher's Poet. And we'll see each other soon. We'll have another conversation.
Peace.
Mind over matter. Overcompensating. Overstatements. Crookedness relating. The soul's churn in return. Mental overstimulation. One word. Riveting. It tears my pilot. Streams that are promised to make